Welcome to Charting the Course, a podcast from Full Sail Capital, dedicated to providing you with insights, assurance, and confidence to grow and manage generational wealth. Full Sail Capital is a fiduciary registered investment advisor managing more than $1.5 billion with a focus on integrity, competency, and transparency.
Tyler and I are joined today by George Colmia. George is an industry veteran with decades worth of experience guiding investors of all ages and wealth levels. We discussed the various phases investors experience based on age, wealth, and life stage.
I can't think of a better topic to ask George to come in and sit in on and give us his opinion. I really enjoyed this one. I think all of our listeners will too. I was going to make a quick comment here and just say that if this is one of your first one or two episodes of Charting the Course that you've listened to, Dexter and I encourage you to go back and listen to the intro when we kind of set up what exactly we're trying to accomplish here and what we're doing, and maybe pick a couple others out and give those a listen. And by all means, please give us feedback. If there's something we can improve on, if there's topics you all would like to hear, we'd love that feedback as well. But at the end of the day, appreciate you listening, appreciate you subscribing. So continue to do so. Really value that feedback from anybody.
I know you'll enjoy our conversation and hope it serves you along your journey. George, thanks for coming by. We asked you to come by to just sort of talk about the stages of investing. So whenever I say that, what kind of comes to mind for you with the stages of an investor's life cycle?
I can really just speak about how that impacted me.
Are you saying you personally, you professionally, as a...
Both.
Okay.
Both. And let me tell you where this all really kind of came from. We were talking one time amongst ourselves about someone made the comment that we go to bankers to borrow money for an enterprise, and a banker who's never ever borrowed money for an enterprise is going to tell us whether or not we should be borrowing that money for our enterprise. That kind of got me thinking. You know, here we are as an advisor, my first 35 years, or I wouldn't say that much, but certainly my first 20 years, I'm following a book. I'd never really had enough to manage. I didn't know what that was like. I was trying to build my net worth, and yet I'm trying to tell older people how they should prepare and deal with later stages of life. And that made me think of that. And thankfully, the book works. Unlike other things, sometimes a book doesn't work. Well, the book for investing does work if we'll follow it. But that made me think about that. And I thought about me personally. I started in this business in 1983. I was just about 32 years old. I had been in business before, and I had been fairly successful for me, for a country boy from Fairview, Oklahoma. You know, I'd done pretty well. I had had some money saved up, and I'm thinking, all right, I'm on my way. So I changed business to this, and like so many people in this business, I lived beyond my means. I didn't save enough money.
So you mean that financial advisors are not always the best investors and savers?
I can't speak for others. I can only speak for me. And in the beginning, even though I did save, I overspent.
So I'd be curious, in the beginning, and whether beginning is by age, by wealth, how would you kind of gradate that? Where do people begin their journey here?
Great question. I was first asked to participate in a 401k plan in 1976 with Anderson Meat Company, owned by Wilson Foods. In 1976, I was 24 years old, bulletproof. I had no thoughts about retirement, and of course, I turned it down. I wasn't going to do that. And it took me a while. I took an uncle one time. An uncle of mine took me to lunch, and he said, I want to ask you something. I said, what's that? He said, you saving any money? I'm making about $8,000 a year. And I said, I don't make enough money to save any money. He said, well, what makes you think if you made double that amount of money, you wouldn't spend double the amount of money? You need to learn how to save right now. I didn't know he was having financial problems. But he kind of gave me a little bit of a heads up. And so the next time I was offered, I did start saving, albeit just a very small amount. But whenever you overspend like I overspent, you know, it's hard to make that up.
It's interesting to me that so many people have a similar story like that, where it's a relationship, particularly from a family member, that gets them started off right. My father-in-law shares a story very similarly of how whenever he was beginning his working life, one of his, I believe it was an uncle, told him everybody makes, I think he said it was about $1 million in the course of their lifetime. It was about the average. What are you going to do with it kind of thing? And that was one that really helped him get along the saving route. So it sounds like there's a lot of relationship involved. As an advisor, I'd be curious, how do you work with people who are getting started out? Because there's just kind of a compensation part that can be hard there with working with people who may not have a whole lot to work with at that point. Does that question make sense?
It does make sense. And I didn't really have the desire to work with people who didn't have enough money for me. You know, I hate to say that. What makes it truth.
Uh-huh.
And I really didn't have a way to resolve that until I came to Full Sail. Mm. And I learned here how people do contribution plans. Well, I mean, it sounds so simple, but I didn't want to wait for a contribution plan. But I think now here, if we can get someone committed to it to contribute monthly to their plan, well, then that makes a lot of sense. That helps overcome that.
So what do advisors do well during that contribution plan stage? How have you seen either yourself or other advisors really add value to people who are in that stage of life or that stage of investing?
I think in that stage of investing, early in life, the most critical thing is to start early. So if we can convince our clients, our friends, our family members, save money right now. Start saving now. Save 10% of what you make right now. And you can do that. You don't miss it. And once you get going at it, you won't miss it. So if we can encourage them to save 10% now, if we can encourage them to treat it smartly, be wise with how they invest their money, grow it, don't be too fancy with it, just keep putting money into it. Don't even look at it for a while. I think that's how we can advise young people to get started.
George, one thing over the years I've kind of learned or began to articulate with my clients and people that ask me the question is, and I'd be curious to get your opinion here, is the stages, I view stages in this way, an accumulation phase, which I think falls into this contribution phase. A lot of people in that accumulation phase of wealth or accumulation phase of investing are the ones who may not have, you know, they're not going to have a massive sum of money to invest up front, but they're probably making a good amount and can do a contribution plan. So they go from that accumulation phase to what I call the preservation phase. You finally have built some wealth and you want to protect it, but keep it growing. And then you move into an enjoyment phase. And I mean, not casting a very wide net here, but most people in that phase are in retirement and are enjoying what they've built all these working years to save. So how do you break down kind of backing up and looking at all the phases? How do you break those down?
I think one of the things we have to do on the first phases where let's do it by not age, but by stages of life.
Okay.
So you come out of college, you've got, hopefully you have a degree and an apartment, six pack of beer in the refrigerator, don't have a whole lot
some
more
cheese
than that.
And turkey.
That's it. out of date ketchup. And you go on about your life and you're kind of worried about, first of all, you're going to enjoy some income. You're finally getting some income after being in school. But you just kind of have a fainting thought about future. And so I think it's important, if we can get people to do it earlier in life, to prioritize their life. How would you prioritize your life? If I gave you four things to prioritize, faith, family, health, wealth, where would you be today?
That's great.
You both have young kids, you know, and whenever you have children, game changer. Getting married's a game changer. You move into a bigger home. Now we've got all that stuff that goes with that, and you have children. Oh my gosh, big game changer. But you also think about beyond yourself and beyond your spouse. Now you've got your children to think about. At the same time, your parents are aging. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's so as we think about those different stages, and you mentioned, Tyler, about you getting to those later stages in life where you're wanting to enjoy it, and yet you've got these other things still reverberating now. Mm-hmm. You may have older parents still that are not enjoying life. You've got some physical ailments. You don't know where that's going to lead you. You've got children that might still have a need or a greed that you would like to fulfill for them. So, I mean, you always have these issues wallowing around. It's just a matter of how you're going to prioritize them. So if we can encourage our young people to think about priorities, if saving for your retirement or saving for your children's education, if those are important to you, prove it.
Mm-hmm.
Prove it to me. Start doing it.
So when do you, and I don't know what the right verb is, whether it's graduate, move on, transition, but when do you move out of that phase and into whatever the next phase is? So you kind of said there's the getting started and then the contribution. Do you graduate out by age, by life events, by wealth? When do you move to the next stage?
I think that's going to be different for everybody as they live their life. For me, I used to do a lot of 401k enrollment meetings.
Mm-hmm.
And some pretty large employers that I did those for, and some of them had some pretty high-income people. And I would tell them that once you really make saving for retirement a priority, and you put in what you should put in for yourself, and hopefully you'll be granted something from your employer, you watch that account grow. You can see it get to 10,000, then 30,000, then 50, and all up. You get to six digits, you think, oh my gosh, I'm wealthy. But as you see it grow, I think you can broaden your horizon a little bit. The issue that I think young people have starting out, if you put it in the golf vernacular, they have too wide of a fairway. Everything looks good. They want to try everything. Let's invest here. Let's invest there. Buy crypto, buy stocks, real estate, buy a home, rent a house, whatever.
I would be curious. I think given your age, you have a unique perspective here. How has social media impacted that? Has it at all with the desire to spend more and see a wider fairway?
And I'll take it one step further to build on that, because I think it's a great point. Just the rapid transfer of information and how quickly via social media, this constant water hose of information that
we are currently sitting here recording a podcast. So please don't think that I am bashing social media, but I do think it adds some challenges. And I'd be curious how you've seen that play out from the investing and financial advisor space, George.
What I've seen a lot of, and I saw it last week, and I'll tell you about it. What I've seen a lot of is people, no matter what you hear, if you even do check the source, you give it all the same amount of weight. You know, it all counts the same. So yet last week I had a client call. This client started with $2 million with us, now has $3 million. Called in a panic because the night before they had been to dinner with two people. One is a housewife and the other is a retired nurse. And the client called, panicked, need to get out of the market. I heard from these people that the market's going to sell off. It's going to have a crash. One of them said I should do annuities. The other one said, doesn't matter what I do, as long as I get out, I just don't know what to do. I said, where did you hear that? And they told me where they'd heard it. And I said, well, first thing you have to do is realize that this person does not know what they do not know about investing. They don't invest. I can't believe you're even panicked about it, but we talked through it. And I told her our thoughts about that. And the next day, I called her again. I said, look, you had time to think about what we talked about. You still feel good? Yeah, I feel good. You promise? I promise. Okay. So I think what the problem we see is people get information from the internet or from a friend, a neighbor across the fence, and they think it always applies. And we have to let people know that what applies for somebody else does not necessarily apply for them.
Mm-hmm.
But to do that, you have to have a good relationship with an advisor. Be good to do some planning, set some goals, some objectives, some priorities, and invest going forward, realizing the hard part is early on, everything looks good. I had to fight that. I still fight that. I see an investment today and it all looks good. You know, it all, when they say it's best to sell to a salesman, you know, it all looks good to me. And so you have to have someone that can kind of weigh that out for you. I think that's the advantage.
I've heard you mention a few things, but I don't want to answer for you. Whenever people are in that 2 to 3 million, they're kind of in, to steal Tyler's vernacular, that enjoyment or preservation phase, where do you see advisors adding the most value for people during that phase of their investing life cycle?
I think the value add for an advisor, I don't care where a client is in the process, is to help a client stay disciplined to their strategy. It's just so easy to fall off the wagon. It's so easy to follow things as things are going well. But when things don't go well, like we had in March of 20 or like we had in December of 18, when things don't go well, it's easy to jump off the wagon. I think our biggest advantage, our biggest value add, is to keep people disciplined to the strategy. I've been telling people lately, we believe in process over prediction. We don't know what the market's going to do. I have no idea what the market might do.
In the short term.
Well, yeah, long term we do know. Mm-hmm. Long term we do know. Just a matter if you can ride that thing out and not let these little things bother you along the way, which is what most people do. They let a little short-term event jeopardize their long-term goals. And I think that's our job as a financial advisor. I used to also say it, we are a counterbalance to our clients. If they get high, we got to bring them down a little bit. If they get too low, we got to bring them up a little bit, because that's how way investing would work.
How have you done that personally with being a counterbalance?
Oh, conversations. I think whenever you advise a client, I used to tell clients, it's our job as an advisor to get into their head and their heart. And you can't do it if we're trying to explain what it is we're doing. We have to ask questions. We got to get in there. And you can't get in there if they don't talk to you. And they won't talk to you if you're talking. So if we can ask the right questions to get in there, I think then we can maybe even see those areas coming where we can keep them disciplined to their strategy.
What stages or events have you seen trip clients up the most, whether it's them retiring, coming into an inheritance, whenever you're talking about a parent passing? Are there any specific events that you have seen clients just particularly get kind of tripped up by?
I have. And one of them that is somewhat surprising, I think success is a horrible teacher. Some people, they cash out some big number, and now they think they got all the brains.
And is that, does the source of that success matter, whether it's a lucky stock investment pick that they made, a business that they successfully built over time? Does that really matter?
Okay. I don't think it does. I've seen it happen more than one time from different people. And sometimes you wonder if they just think, now I'm on a hot streak, or if they really think I'm that smart, you know, to be able to do that. So anyway, I think success is a horrible teacher.
So using your counterbalance idea, how hard is it to have that conversation and essentially try and take the other side of that?
Yes, great question.
Is that what you try and do there? And I guess, is that your way to add value during that success event?
What I've tried to do in the past is delay. If someone has that sort of an event, it's okay to do your planning, have your conversations, get your accounts set up, get your thoughts organized, but don't do anything for a while. Think it through. So if we can have 6 months and then use that 6 months to help educate the client, that's what works best for us. Education is the key. I think we're blessed in a very general sense. Our clients are smart people. They may not be well informed about particular topics, but they're smart people. If we can do our part to educate them about why we're doing what we do, and I think that's a real big key. We spend so much time on what, not enough time on why. Why do we do it this way? I think we can help solve a lot of issues before they start.
Tyler, you're kind of on the opposite end here. You're dealing with a lot more clients who are in that accumulation stage. Mm-hmm. What do you see the challenges for both clients and then you as an advisor during that stage?
So like George used to, I spend a lot of my time on the 401k side here at Full Sail. So I'm in front of investors who don't quite get it, don't quite understand it. They don't know why they should be saving half the time. So to George's point, one of my big focuses is to help educate and help these very hardworking people understand the importance of saving. And a lot of times it's a first generation decision for them to begin saving and really taking ownership of their future and trying to convince them that, you know, they can have an impact on not only their own life, but then maybe their kids' lives. So I think my biggest thing is just, you got to start somewhere. You know, I have the opportunity to work with a lot of people that, you know, aren't going to walk into our office on a daily basis. You know, they need to start saving in their 401k before we can start working with them.
I agree with that.
And I have no problem telling clients that. If you're not taking advantage of the opportunities to save through maybe a workplace retirement program, and that's going to be the first place I'm going to point them. But I think the biggest thing is getting them to start and just start small. For some people, it's putting in, you got to sometimes break it down into even a dollar amount. Well, how much do you go spend it on dinner? Or
I see you nodding along there, George.
Can
you think of a client either that started small and has just an absolute success story in that regard with someone who slowly inched their way up or just was a small contributor the entire time and has reached that success point?
I had three brothers. Their parents died at the same time. All three brothers got the same amount of money. One of them, I'm sorry to say, died early. So the remaining brothers split the other brother's money. They each had the same amount of money. One of them is a school teacher. His wife doesn't work. He works his tail off, and he's very thoughtful about his money. And he has grown his money. The other one didn't work, didn't think he needed to. And I could see on activity how many times he would go to the ATM at a casino, and he would not follow any of my suggestions. And so I told him he had to take his business somewhere else. I wasn't going to deal with him. So you see it, and it's just a matter, you don't know why they're different. Two brothers, 2 years apart, grew up in the same environment, and they're just wildly different. But I think what we fail to remember, whenever our kids get of age to where they can drive, they take driver's education, you spend some time in the front seat with them, and you'll be petrified when you do it, but you do it, and you drive around town, and you're just kind of hoping you don't get hit, but you make them good drivers. We don't do that with money. And yet we want to work our tails off to get this net worth to leave to our children with no instructions.
It still blows my mind that we do not teach personal finance in high school.
I know.
I can't fathom it. I mean, it was an elective when I was in high school, and I know why I took it, because I know the teacher was a coach and it was an easy class. But
I still think that comes back to the relationship aspect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So to George's point, we can't, and by we, I mean any parent, can't just assume our kids are going to pick this up.
Right, good or not.
And they're going to figure it out. And they're going to know, you know, my kids have no idea. They don't even know what I do. They think, you know, trying to explain investing to an 8-year-old is, I still haven't quite figured out how to do it.
It's hard to do it.
You know, I think they think I just print money at the office and hand it out to people, which would be a great job.
I've rehearsed it with my daughter. She knows that I am good at finances and fantasy football. That's what I offer. That's what I offer to
fair,
life.
Fair.
I have a good friend who he's a money manager, and his daughter never showed any interest at all in finance. I mean, and this guy, he's CFA, manages a lot of money. And one day his daughter came to him and says, "Dad, I want you to teach me about what you do." Oh, great. And they sat down, and he's in one chair. She's on the couch. He's talking. She's writing the legal pad. This is fantastic. Phone rings. She had to go get the phone. While she went to the phone, he just happened to look at the legal pad, and the legal pad said, blah, 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 blah. Just a whole page of blah, 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 blah. And it's a true story, but it's also, that's what our kids have to face when we try to make teaching them an event. It cannot be an event. It's got to be a process. And so it takes a while. What we've done in our home, we did financial plans. We started our first financial plan maybe 10 or 12 years ago. Carla and I did. And we share it with our children. They see it. And then we also know what we want. They know what we want. And I think if we communicate like that, if we can keep talking like that. My son was home over the weekend. And on Friday, I'm checking my Fidelity website. He pulls the phone over so he can see it. Oh, it looks pretty good, you know. And that kind of stuff I think is good. We have to get them involved in that. It seems like every so often, fundamentals of investing, fundamentals of football, fundamentals of whatever seem to be passé. Oh, no, we found a better way, you know.
Yep.
But I think when it comes to investing, fundamentals are not passé. I think that you have to follow the script.
So you mentioned football. Everybody's going to say blocking and tackling are the fundamentals there. What are the fundamentals of investing?
Mm-hmm.
Great question. I think it starts with having a plan. It's hard to know how to get someplace if you don't know where it is you're going. So I'd like to have a plan. Most plans today, if you can outline your goals, objectives, your, as we call, your needs, your greeds, your legacy, lay all that out there, what's important, what's not. We can help with allocations and help build that investment structure to fit the plan. But it starts with a plan. It starts with a regular review of your progress toward your plan. I think it also has to entail the right professionals, not just an investment advisor, a good tax advisor, a good legal advisor to do it right. And that costs money. I think what we've tried to get people to do, I did it today, talked to a new client today. If things work out, we'll be managing $18 million. And I said, your fee for that is going to be right around 0.6% with our fee schedule. So you're going to be paying us about $100,000 a year. And they kind of sat back and, whoa. I said, but think about that. If you have an $18 million business and for $100,000, you pay your manager, your support staff, your health care, your everything, 0.6% to run the business, it becomes more palatable, and it does to them too. So it's just a matter, I think, of getting it in the right perspective fundamentally. But even in fundamentals, I think sometimes it just takes someone to say it a certain way before you get it. Going back to the golf, forever I was taught to swing right of the target. Well, that's kind of hard to think about. I don't want to go to the target. Why do I want to swing right of the target? And then finally a guy told me, don't hit the back of the ball. Hit that inside dimple. Well, that's the same thing.
Are you sure that wasn't just because you aim left every time and they're trying to fix it that way?
Maybe. Don't know. But my point there is someone can kind of say it sometimes the right way that clicks, and that can be the difference maker.
George, yep. How do you address, because I think our business, not necessarily Full Sail, but I think the financial advising or the financial planning industry gets a bad rap that we all sit around the table and we want to tell people that they can't enjoy anything, they need to save, they need to eat ramen, don't spend money. And we do all those things, but we also want to be able to help people.
Here's your allowance as though we're parents.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And I think that's been one of my big conversations that I have. One of the big conversations that I have with some clients and even just friends and family is there's got to be a balance. And so how have you ever addressed that with clients? It's, we want you to enjoy. You've worked really hard for this. This client today, like, you know, we're not trying to hogtie that up and never let it go. It's just we want to be a good, fundamentally sound resource for them.
That thing you just said, I had a client tell me that. I feel like I got a call, ask daddy for money whenever I call you.
And that wasn't your daughter.
That wasn't my daughter. No, okay. It was actually a man who's older than me. I think what we need to do is what I tried to do is just let them know all I'm caring about is your goals. You say you want to go there. And yep. I don't want to disrupt that goal. I don't want to throw us off where we can't get there. But most of them, you know, again, our clients are blessed.
Yep.
They can do those sorts of things and won't impact their goal much. That's an interesting metric that I think we should follow for clients that do have a plan. If they tell us they're going to spend $185,000 a year and we find out they're spending $230,000, we need to have that conversation.
Right.
It's
right.
Okay to spend the $230,000 just as long as you know you may have to give up something later on in life.
It's that conversation around the goals, and I think you've hit on it through this conversation today, is let's lay out the goals, let's be organized, and as long as we're all on the same page, we'll help you get there.
It will be difficult, though. Something that Carla pointed out about me, whenever I do retire, whenever that day does come, and we don't have money coming in, just going out, and we get that March of 20 or that December of 18 when the market sells off, she says, George, you're going to have a hard time with that. And I may. I don't know.
Yeah, fair.
I like to think I'm going to be in good hands with you guys. I won't have a hard time with it. But that is something that older people, as you get older, you think about that, and that was what led me to this whole thing to begin with,
mm-hmm.
is that you think that as you're younger, you want to accumulate, then you start saving for your kids, you start getting your education, your retirement kind of on track, and you're able to enjoy more. Then you finally get to 70 years old, you're on Medicare, you're on Social Security, you've got your pot of money, and you got no worries. Well, no. That's not the way that works. You know, you still have your worries. Mm-hmm. You still wonder, is it going to be enough? Is my family going to have enough if something happens to me? So those worries never really leave you.
Mm-hmm.
They just change a little bit.
Right.
And that's where I think as advisors, the more we can ask those clients, just get in that heart, get mm-hmm. into that head. What is it about them? What keeps them up at night?
Right. Yeah, it's different with everybody.
It's different for everybody. That's great.
What's one of the more unusual but fun goals that you have seen a client tell you that they wanted to achieve?
Good question.
You know, it's one about a client is about me.
Okay.
About 10 years ago, we had a new manager come into the firm I was with, and he said, George, my job is to make you happy. That's what he said. What would make you happy? Well, you know, going to Italy for 2 weeks and make me happy. Just getting out of here for 2 weeks. Okay. Well, a month later, hey, you got that trip to Italy on the calendar yet? I said, no. He said, well, he says it's important to you. Get on the calendar. A month later, you got on the calendar yet? Every month he had asked me till I put on the calendar. So I think, and it was the best thing I ever did. So if we have clients that just, whatever it is, I had a client. He was diagnosed with ALS, and his wife wanted to travel. He didn't know if he could. We encouraged them, go. They went, and that was his last trip.
Mm.
He died about 2 years later, you know, but at least he got to go.
Right.
So I think anything like that, they're small victories, but they're victories.
George, appreciate your time. One of our favorite questions to ask guests is, what noun that follows your name are you most proud of? So husband,
I can make it up myself.
You can. Husband, father,
well, and I see you
investor.
Throw those in there.
Yeah.
Those,
so what
those,
noun?
Those trump everything.
What noun that follows your name are you most proud of?
Let's take familial nouns out of there.
Fair enough.
That trumps it all. I would say Christian.
Mm-hmm. Why do you go there?
Well, because we are. You know, I've worn this since 1978. I've never taken it off. Well, I take it off, but I mean, I just, that's what I am. Besides that, teacher,
that's interesting.
Advisor.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what we do as an advisor,
mm-hmm.
teach.
Mm-hmm.
And we just got to get people to learn. That's the hard part.
Yeah.
But I can be it.
I love that. That's great. Thanks, George.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. This was fun.
Until next time, fair winds and falling seas.
If you enjoyed today's conversation, please review and subscribe through your preferred podcast platform. Have a great week. All opinions expressed by the host and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinions of Full Sail Capital. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as a basis for investment decisions. Clients of Full Sail may maintain positions in the securities discussed in this podcast. Thank you.